Welcome to the Anacortes Christian Church podcast. We hope that our messages are a weekly source of worship, teaching, and growth for you as we all learn to navigate life as followers of Jesus. Our mission at ACC is to transform lifeless spaces into life-giving places through Jesus Christ, transformation of ourselves and the world around us. As you join us this week, either on your bike, in your car, or running through the streets of your city, we pray that the words you hear today will transform not only you, but those around you. So, let's get into the message, starting with our Bible reading for this week.
I'll be reading this morning from the book of Jonah, the whole chapter, so strap in, and hopefully you won't get too tired standing there. And this will be from the English Standard Version, the ESV. Now the word of the Lord came to Jonah, the son of Amittai, saying, "Arise, go to Nineveh, that great city, and call out against it, for their evil has come up before me." But Jonah rose to flee to Tarshish from the presence of the Lord. He went down to Joppa and found a ship going to Tarshish. So he paid the fare and went down into it to go with them to Tarshish, away from the presence of the Lord. But the Lord hurled a great wind upon the sea, and there was a mighty tempest on the sea, so that the ship threatened to break up. Then the mariners were afraid and cried out to his God. And they, then the mariners were afraid. They were very afraid. And each cried out to his God. And they hurled the cargo that was in the ship into the sea to lighten it for them. But Jonah had gone down into the inner part of the ship and had laid down and was fast asleep. So the captain came and said to him, "What do you mean, you sleeper? Arise, call out to your God. Perhaps the God will give a thought to us that we may not perish." And they said to one another, "Come, let us cast lots, that we may know on whose account this evil has come upon us." So they cast lots, and the lot fell on Jonah. Then they said to him, "Tell us on whose account this evil has come upon us. What is your occupation, and where do you come from? What is your country, and what people are you?" And he said to them, "I am a Hebrew, and I fear the Lord, the God of heaven, who made the sea and the dry land." Then the men were exceedingly afraid and said to him, "What is this you have done?" For the men knew that he was fleeing from the presence of the Lord, because he had told them. Then they said to him, "What shall we do to you, that the sea may quiet down for us?" For the sea grew more and more tempestuous. And he said to them, "Pick me up and hurl me into the sea, then the sea will quiet down for you. For I know it is because of me that this great tempest has come upon you." Nevertheless, the men rowed hard to get back to dry land, but they could not, for the sea grew more and more tempestuous against them. Therefore they called out to the Lord, "O Lord, let us not perish for this man's life, and lay not on us innocent blood, for you, O Lord, have done as it pleased you." So they picked up Jonah and hurled him into the sea, and the sea ceased from its raging. Then the men feared the Lord exceedingly, and they offered a sacrifice to the Lord and made vows. And the Lord appointed a great fish to swallow up Jonah. And Jonah was in the belly of the fish 3 days and three nights.
Thanks, Mark. And you may be seated. Morning. So today we are going to do things a little bit differently. We're going to kick off with some brief entertainment. And so I want you to direct your eyes to the screen. You didn't know you were getting a show this morning. And just watch this. Okay. I mean, first thing I want to say is that kid is my hero. That was awesome. The second thing I want to kind of bring up is I am so glad that I was not a parent who had a kid in that show, because, I mean, let's just be honest. Once that kid started, like, his little shimmy, it's like my eyes, if you were like me, they were, like, glued to him. I would not have noticed my kid at all, right? And so very relieved that that didn't take place here during Sounds and Taste. But I think it's doubtless to say that kid stole the show, right? And this morning, we are about to begin a journey in the book of Jonah. And Jonah, I think, is kind of like that performance that we just watched. Because what we're going to see is there's so many sensational parts to this story that it could easily distract us from the bigger picture. I mean, everything in this story is huge. The storm is huge. The fish is huge. The city is huge. Everything, the word huge is given 15 times. It's meant to be, it's blown kind of out of proportion. And I think the most obvious attention grabber here is the fish. I think we would probably all agree with that. I mean, it's massive, it's mysterious, it's miraculous. And if we're honest, in our modern culture, the fish has become a bit of a celebrity. I mean, I was just talking to Tyler trying to find like a picture that we could use. You can't find one without the fish in it. Go to any children's book, the fish is like smack dab in the cover. The fish has become the celebrity of the story. And I don't want you to misunderstand me. I'm a huge fan of the fish, okay? He or she, quite innocently, plays a huge role, a vital role in the story. But the truth is that in the grand scheme of the story, the fish is a minor player that our culture has made into a major distraction. Our conversations about Jonah, when they happen, they typically turn into debates that revolve about whether it was a fish or a whale, or we start talking about like fish anatomy. Okay, how would it be possible? And we start looking at, and here's the deal. It's not about the fish. And so my plea with you today, before we get into the story, is look past the fish. Don't let the fish hijack the narrative, because if you do, you will miss what you were meant to see. The message here is one that we cannot afford to miss. Because again, the story is not about the fish, and it's not about Jonah, and the story was never written and intended to be like this test to hold up to someone to see if they take Scripture seriously or not. And it wasn't even meant to teach moral lessons like be merciful or compassionate, even though those are good lessons to learn. At the heart of this story, it's about God. He is the star of this show. Every element of this book, every point that is made, it's supposed to point us towards Him. It's supposed to reveal His nature. It's supposed to reveal His character. And it's supposed to reveal how we should respond to Him. And so I just want to lay that out there. Before we step into this story, that's what I want you to put your focus on. And so let's get into it. Now the word of the Lord came to Dove, son of faithfulness. That's what Jonah's name means. Arise and go to Nineveh, that great city, and call out against it, for their evil has come up before me. And so just stopping right there, the first thing I think... The big thing I think we need to understand about Jonah before we move on is it is a book of unexpecteds. Now, I don't know if unexpecteds is a word, but I just made it up, so we'll go with it. Everything in this story is it's extraordinarily upside down. I mean, right here, we're not even two sentences into the thing, and we already have two like major head scratchers here. So here's the first one. Okay, the first one is that the book of Jonah, it falls into a category of other books in the Bible that are the writings of the prophets. And so a prophet, I think sometimes we consider prophets like they told the future, and yes, sometimes that's something they did. But more than, the prophets were bigger than that. So the prophets, they were individuals that spoke on God's behalf. They were like God's mouth. Their job was to go to the people and give God's perspective on certain situations. And so that was the job of the prophet. And the prophetic books that we have, they typically all start the same way. You know, they're in similar fashion. You would have something like the word of the Lord or the word of Yahweh came to so-and-so. And then you would have the prophet's words. And so you can go to any of the prophetic books and they're going to give you something like that. It's like, these are the words of Jeremiah, son of so-and-so. And the word of the Lord came to Hosea, son of, you can go through the books and you'll see that that formula typically is there. And then what would always follow this introduction is obvious, it would be the words of the prophet. And so here we get to the book of Jonah and we have this introduction, right? And so the next thing, what are we expecting to see? I mean, we're expecting to see the words of Jonah. And instead, we're blindsided by his story. This is the only book of the prophets that does this. And even more strange than that is there's no dates. There's no names besides Jonah. You've got like one of the major players in all of ancient history, the king of Assyria. And they don't give us his name or the time that this took place or anything like that. And so Jonah seems to be in a category all of its own, and there's nothing in the Bible like it. And so as the audience, what we're supposed to kind of read this and be thrown back a little bit, but you were gonna say, hey, it's cool, let's just roll with it, let's see what the story's about. And we're reading a story about one of God's prophets. His name is Dove, son of faithfulness, and we think to ourselves, I know how this is gonna go. I mean, I taught English, high school English for 10 years, and I would tell my students, you know, you need to read into the story, kind of get context clues and make some predictions. And so obviously, I mean, we got Dove, son of faithfulness here. We know how this story's gonna go. I mean, if I said to you, hey, I'm gonna tell you a story about a warrior named Crusher, son of destruction, you could probably make some predictions, right? And so here, we're told that God, he is the maker of heaven and earth, and he is looking down and he is surveying his realm, and he comes to Assyria and the Assyrian Empire, which Nineveh was the capital of. And you got to understand, at this point, the Assyrian Empire was the most powerful empire the world had ever seen. It was also the most brutal empire the world had ever seen. They were known, and still are, for their brutalness. And so God sees the Assyrian Empire and just says, this is enough of this. And he goes to his man, Dove, son of faithfulness. And he says, Dove, you're my guy. I need you to relay a message for me to this wicked empire, and I let them know that I've had it. I'm done. And so you can imagine, you're reading this story for the first time. I mean, what do you think happens? I mean, he's Dove, son of faithfulness. Faithfulness is literally in his name. So we're expecting, obviously, he's going to go, right? And that's when we're sucker punched by the next line. It says, but Dove, son of faithfulness, rose to flee Tarshish. And then this is key. It's repeated twice. From the presence of the Lord. And then he goes, this is how he did it. He went down to Joppa. He found a ship going to Tarshish. And so he paid the fare. He went down into it to go with him to Tarshish, away from the presence of the Lord. You're like, what? Dove, son of faithfulness, what are you doing? It's like, what's going on here? One of God's chosen prophets is attempting to unchoose God. It's like, I'm pretty sure that's not supposed to happen. But again, this is the book of Jonah. It's a book that blows all our preconceptions about the world and our neat black and white categories out of the water. This is a story where the supposed good guy is really the bad guy, and the bad guys and the sea creatures, they behave like the good guys. And this book, it's going to force us to stop and question and reconsider everything that we think we're certain about when it comes to ourselves and when it comes to this world. Because the truth is, there are no good guys. There's just a good God. And I think that's one of the major points here. And so we get back to Jonah. He's trying to run away from God's presence. And again, it's like, I mean, come on now. I mean, he's a prophet. Surely he knows Psalm 139. Where can I flee from your presence? If I go up to the heavens, you are there. If I make my bed in the depths, you are there. If I rise on wings of the dawn, if I settle on the far side of the sea, you are there. I mean, he's got to know this, right? And more than that, I mean, Dove, son of faithfulness, is attempting to go AWOL by telling God, get out of my life. I don't want you. I want to be as far away from you as physically possible. We've got a map. I want to kind of just show you, Zach, if you'll throw that up there. So this kind of gives you some perspective. So Jonah, he is supposed to go east to Nineveh. And instead, what you're going to see is he goes to Tarshish. And that's where he's trying to go. And that is as far west as was humanly possible in the ancient world. It was literally the last port that you would hit before you would go into like the chaotic sea and the edge of the world. Like, Jonah's making a statement here. He wants to put as much distance between God and him as he possibly can. And so we're left thinking, I mean, what would cause one of God's prophets to do this? And initially, you know, you're probably thinking, I was, that it was out of fear. I mean, we've already heard the Assyrian Empire was one of the most powerful and brutal empires in all of the ancient world. So just to kind of give you a clue, their general practice was to, they would go in, they would plunder a city, and then they would skin alive all the city's leaders in front of everybody before they would deport them to Assyria to make them slaves. I mean, this is kind of, that's what they did. And so obviously fear would be a natural response, kind of like being parachuted into Germany during World War II and just talking, telling off the German Empire, right? Or the Third Reich. It'd be terrifying. But here's the interesting thing. Jonah's reason for rebelling and running from God, it wasn't fear. You want to know what it was? Now, I'm going to just, warning, I'm going to give some spoilers here. I have to in order to kind of make my point. Jonah does eventually preach to Nineveh. Like, God literally has to physically take him to Nineveh to preach. Jonah goes, preaches the worst sermon in the history of the world, doesn't mention anything about God, doesn't mention anything about repentance. It was literally five words. Anyway, this is my paraphrase, but it's not far off. It says, 40 days and you're done. That was the sermon. That was the message. And here's the crazy thing, is all of Nineveh repents. Like Mike, how would you feel if you gave a message and everybody was so emotionally shaken and stirred that, I mean, there's people everywhere that are just like making decisions and moving. I mean, how would that feel? He's giving a thumbs up. That's like every pastor prophet's dream, right? And yet what we see, again, this book is completely upside down. Jonah's ticked. He's just preached a message where it's been the most effective message probably ever up to this time. And he's ticked off at God. He loses his temper. I'm jumping ahead to chapter 4. And he yells at God. And this is what he said. God, I knew it. When I was back home in Israel, I knew this was going to happen. That's why I ran to Tarshish. I knew you were sheer grace and mercy. You're not easily angered. You're so rich in love. And you're just ready at the drop of a hat to turn your plans of punishment into a plan of forgiveness or a program of forgiveness. The reason Jonah fled from God and attempted to push him completely out of his life, because he wasn't willing to let go of his hate and his desire for revenge. I can understand this. Like the Assyrians, they were the ones who, they had already come. They had wiped off 10 of the tribes of Israel, just wiped them completely off the map. They were the ones who killed and tortured his fellow Israelite brothers and sisters. And Jonah did not want to live in a world where the Assyrians could possibly be forgiven. And so here it is. Given the choice between pursuing God's presence or holding on to revenge and his hate, Jonah chose hate. Jonah chose revenge. He would rather have that than God, and I want you to notice where it took him. It's not accidental. And so writers, a lot of times, the biblical writers, what they would do is they would repeat words. If they wanted to lay emphasis on something and want you to pay attention to something or paint a picture, they would use it a lot of times through repeated words. And we're going to see this word down. It appears a lot. It appears a lot in chapter 1. It appears a lot in chapter 2 next week. There's an emphasis here. God told Jonah to rise up and go to Nineveh, but instead Jonah went down. He went down to Joppa. He went down into the boat. He went down into the inner part of the ship. He laid down. Again, the downward journey, it's going to continue into chapter 2 until the point where he can't go any further down because he's as far down as you could possibly go. And I think this is the greatest irony. In a book of unexpecteds, the greatest irony is this. Jonah thought he was running for his life, and the entire time he was running from his life. I mean, Jonah thought, I'm running for my life, I'm going to survive, and the entire time he is running away from life. Do you have a Tarshish in your life? You know, that vision of your life that competes with the vision that God has for you. Is there something you're stubbornly holding on to and clinging to and you're unwilling to let go of, and it's keeping you from experiencing the life that God desires for you? And you may not even realize it, but like Jonah, that counterfeit Eden that you're just clinging on to, it's like an anchor. And it's dragging you to your own self-destruction. But here's great news. We're soon about to discover, to read about it. God's mercy is more relentless and fierce than the most pig-headed faithlessness. God's mercy is more relentless and fierce than the most pig-headed faithlessness. And so we read Jonah, he's making his downward descent into the ship. And this is how God responds. It's in verse 4. But the Lord hurled a great wind upon the sea. And there was a mighty tempest or storm on the sea, so that the ship threatened to break up. This kind of seems to be like the over-the-top style of Jonah that we see. It's like the ship's animated. Like the literal words here are the ship pondered whether it was going to break up or not. It's like it's thinking, should I break up? Should I not break up? It's like the ship's alive. And that's kind of what we see in a lot of the parts of this book. And then in verse 5, then the mariners, these pagan sailors, they were afraid. They were terrified. And each cried out to his God, and they hurled the cargo that was in the ship into the sea to lighten it for them. And so you got these pagan polytheists, right? They believe in all sorts of gods, and all these gods, they control all sorts of different elements of the world. And they're just kind of like just praying to all of them. They're just hoping one of them, whoever's responsible for this storm, is gonna hear them and relent. And then the other thing is that they're chunking cargo off. This is their income. I mean, this is how they make their living. And they're so desperate, they're willing to just give it all up. Have you ever had something in your life that you were just like, I will give everything if this situation will change? If you've had that experience, then you can relate to these guys because they are so desperate and so scared that they're willing to give up whatever it takes to get out of this situation. But we read, Jonah had gone down into the inner part of the ship and had laid down, and he was fast asleep. I think it's safe to say he's not just physically asleep, he's spiritually asleep. Now, I'm just trying to point out these places of irony in this story, because there's huge irony in what we're about to read. We're going to have a pagan who is about to reprimand the prophet. Okay, it's like a role reversal here. And he's going to tell him to pray to his God. It says, so the captain came and said to him, what do you mean, sleeper? What are you doing? Arise, call out to your God. Perhaps the God will give a thought to us. And his God is definitely aware of them, so that we may not perish. And they said to one another, come, let's cast lots. It's kind of like drawing straws or whatever you want to think. It's like, you know, short man gets the straw. They're gonna cast lots so that they will know like whose fault this is. And so the lot, it's cast, it falls on Jonah. And then they said to him, it's like interrogation time here. You tell us on whose account this evil came has come upon us. What's your occupation? Where did you come from? What's your country? And what people are you? And then check out Jonah's answer. He said to them, I'm Hebrew, and I fear the Lord, the God of heaven, who made the sea and the dry land. So you have two observations here. I mean, the first, does Jonah really fear the Lord? I mean, what he claims and what his actions are saying are two very different pictures. In fact, in this whole story, I would say the one that fears the Lord the least is Jonah. Something's not adding up here. And the second one is, I mean, Jonah's hate has obviously driven him to the point where he is completely out of his mind. And even the pagan sailors can recognize this. I mean, check out the response. It's like, these men, they were exceedingly afraid. So it's like, if they were already like scared out of their minds, somehow that has increased and they're even more scared. I'm not sure how. And they say, what is this you've done? For the men knew he was fleeing from the presence of the Lord because he had told them. So at some point he's told them what he was doing, whether it's at the beginning of the trip or now or whatever. And so, I mean, like they're saying to him, so let me get this straight. You're telling us your God created the sea and you're attempting to run away from him on the sea. It's like, what's wrong with you? It's like that doesn't make any sense. And then they said to him, what shall we do to you that the sea may quiet down for us? For the sea grew more and more tempestuous. I'm not sure, again, how that's possible, but the storm keeps getting worse and worse and worse. And so, like, they're searching for solutions. And the intensity of the storm, it just keeps getting worse and worse and worse. And I want you to say, can you just see the intensity and the relentless nature of God's pursuit here? I mean, God's the one that sent this storm. And as the severity of the storm grows, can you not just see his footsteps? They're in the waves, and they are moving faster and faster and faster with more determination. And it's like, no, 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 Jonah, you're not getting away from me. All right, you can keep trying, and I'm just going to keep pursuing you harder. And so he, Jonah, said to them, pick me up, hurl me into the sea, then the sea will quiet down for you, for I know it. It's because of me that this great storm or tempest has come upon you. And this strikes me as interesting because, I mean, here's the reality. Jonah could have just relented, right? I mean, I'm pretty sure he could have just said, Uncle, I give in, I give up. You know, I was trying to escape Yahweh. Guys, hey, if you'll just take me back, I'll go back to Yahweh, and I'm pretty sure things will be the same. And there's no remorse here. There's no repentance. There's just a death wish. And this won't be the only time we see Jonah opt for death instead of repentance. But nevertheless, the men rowed hard to get back to dry land, but they couldn't, for the sea, it grew even more and more tempestuous against them. Therefore, they called out to the Lord, O Lord, let us not perish for this man's life and lay not on us innocent blood, for you, O Lord, have done as it pleased you. And so they picked up Jonah, they hurled him into the sea, and the sea ceased from its raging. And I love this part. The men feared the Lord exceedingly, and they offered a sacrifice to the Lord and made vows. And so that's not a small thing. So one of two things must have happened. Either there was a special part of this ship, a wooden ship, where they made like a huge sacrifice. It's probably not the safest thing to do. Most likely what they did is after this is all said and done, they went somewhere where they could offer a sacrifice to God. And it's like you can see a conversion here. There is a change of allegiance that takes place with these pagan sailors. There's an interaction that they've had with Yahweh, the creator of heaven and earth, and they are never the same. I'm pretty sure about that. And then in verse 17, it says, and the Lord appointed a great fish to swallow up Jonah, and Jonah was in the belly of the fish 3 days and three nights. So finally, the fish enters the story. This is his one and only scene. It's got one line. And my hope is that now that we see the fish from a new perspective, and here's what the The fish was a good and faithful servant of Yahweh. The fish did what it was supposed to do. God used the fish to rescue his faithless prophet. The fish is doing what Jonah was supposed to do. Obey and be a means of redemption to faithless people. And so far we have pagan sailors and fish have been better prophets than Jonah. And so I don't know about you, but as I read Jonah and as I've gotten into this story, it's been very easy for me to point the finger at Jonah and to criticize him and to say, you're an idiot. You know, how could you choose revenge over God? How could you push him out of your life? How could you be so selfish and foolish? But I was having these thoughts and then something hit me. And I think this has been the biggest shock in the entire story, at least for me, is the realization that I'm Jonah. Because you see, this book is, it's like a mirror. I think that's what it was meant to be. It reveals, it's like we look at it and we're reading it and we're making fun of Jonah, and then all of a sudden we're thinking, hey, I'm not really different than Jonah. And it's revealing the worst parts of you and me. You like Jonah, you and I often have a vision for our lives that competes with God's desire and his vision for us. God is inviting us into something bigger than ourselves, and we are just preoccupied with our own agenda. And this competing vision, it manifests itself each moment that we choose disobedience. Every time we choose to be selfish when we should be selfless, anytime we choose pride over humility, anytime we choose anger over patience, anytime we choose lust over love or value projects over people, or we have apathy when we should have concern. And through these choices, they reveal something. We may say we fear God, but our actions, I know mine do, they scream out to God so often, my way's better than yours. I don't want you. I don't need you. Come talk to me when you've come to your senses and see things my way. That's what my actions usually speak to God. And like Jonah, you and I can talk a good game about fearing the Lord, but so often our actions, again, tell the truth about how we really feel. And like Jonah, our situation would be absolutely hopeless and tragic were it not for the fact that there's a God who has relentlessly pursued Jonah. And just in the same way that he's pursued Jonah, he pursues us with an inescapable mercy and grace that is unrivaled by the worst faithlessness. God is pursuing you right now with an intensity that you cannot imagine. Just take a minute and let that sink in. God is pursuing you right now. And here's how I know this. Because when you and I and all of humanity were at our worst, God pursued us with unrivaled passion and intensity in the person of Jesus of Nazareth. And like we're going to see with Jonah next week in chapter 2, Jesus entered into the darkness to pull me and you out and to give us a new life. A second chance. John 3 says this, for God so loved the world that he gave his only son, that whoever believes in him should not perish but have everlasting life. For God did not send his son into the world to condemn the world, but in order that the world might be saved through him. Whoever believes in him is not condemned, but whoever does not believe in him is condemned already because he has not believed in the name of the only Son of God. It goes on. And this is the judgment. The light has come into the world, and people loved the darkness rather than the light because their works were evil. For everyone who does wicked things hates the light and does not come into the light, unless his work should be exposed. But whoever does what is true comes to the light, so that it may be clearly seen that his works have been carried out by God. I've been talking with our students the last 3 weeks about light and life and how they're related. And this was our passage from last Sunday. And what it's not saying, because again, the language, the translation is a little bit tricky at the end. What it's not saying is that there are some bad people who love darkness, and then there are some good people and true that love light. That's not what it's saying. What it's saying is that we have all lived in darkness. And then the presence of Jesus has come, and he is a light that shines in the darkness. And so when we're talking about Jesus and light, we're not really talking about, I don't think, about physical light and physical darkness. Just a way to help us understand. What we're talking about is that Jesus is a light that comes in and reveals things that are hidden. Things that we can't see. Things that we're blind to. And all of a sudden, Jesus' presence comes into the picture, and he's a light that reveals those things. And all of a sudden, we're exposed. And we can see what's going on in here. And so you had, like in Jesus' day, you had individuals like the religious leaders. They had power. They had their programming. And they were not willing to let go of that. And so they loved the darkness. And when they were exposed to the light, they chose darkness. And then on the other side, you had people. And typically, go read the Gospel of John. It's typically people that were at the end of themselves. And they experienced Jesus, and they were exposed, and they were like, oh my gosh, this breaks my heart. And they were the ones, they had nothing to lose. They embraced the light that gives life, and now they've come into a place where they are guided by the truth. That's the picture here. The picture here is that there's a choice that we all must make. And you have two choices. And it's, how are you going to respond to the light? Are you going to hold on and flee to the darkness? Or are you going to embrace the light and choose life? So again, I ask, is there a Tarshish in your life? What's the thing that you're running to instead of God? Is there a place in your life where you can feel God's calling you to something? Maybe he's calling you to give up something. Maybe he's calling you to a place. Maybe he's calling you into a relationship. I don't know. But is there a place that God is calling you to come and follow him, but your stubborn reluctance to loosen your grip on whatever counterfeit Eden you're clinging to? You know, and maybe you're fully unaware of this, but it's dragging you down further and further into a place that is slowly destroying you. And so, and here's where we're at. For some of you in here, maybe you've never actually made a decision to trust Jesus with your life. Maybe you've never made a decision that I'm going to follow him. And so you're at that initial point where you're choosing darkness or you're choosing light. And this is an opportunity for you. And maybe it's fears, maybe it's questions, whatever it might be. Maybe it's like, I don't know what this is going to entail. And so you can't seem to let go of those things. And maybe today is the day that you let go of those things and that you give your life up to Jesus. And you go and pursue life. The reality is, and I realize this, that most of you in here have already made the decision to follow Jesus. That's why you're here. But that doesn't make you immune from having dark places in your life that Jesus wants to address and call you out of. And so as followers of Jesus, you know, we're just as susceptible. We can fall into the trap of being wooed to Tarshish. Latching onto and clinging to things that can drag us down and away from experienced life. And again, I don't know what it could be for you. It could be anger. It could be unforgiveness. It could be pride. It could be a damaged or unhealthy relationship. It could be selfishness. It could be fear. It could be your comfort and security that you don't want to give up. It could be maybe he's calling you to hand over like a part of your time. Or maybe he's calling you to say, you know, you need to give this thing that you're giving your time to pursue something more important. Could be what you do with your money or your abilities or your talents. I don't know. But here's what I do know, that in a room this size, there are people in here that are struggling to let go, and they're running to Tarshish when they should be running to God. And maybe that's you. And so what I want to do, and Tyler, if you want to go ahead and come make your way up here, I want to offer a chance, an opportunity for you to respond. It's an invitation. You don't have to take it, but it's here. Because how often do we get to really, like, I come in, experience God's presence, and just have a moment to just be quiet and think and do business with God? And so there's an invitation to respond to the life-giving presence of God. And so maybe, I don't know what that response looks like for you. Maybe it's, we're going to have some individuals up here, some men and women, that if you need to talk to someone, it's your chance to talk to someone. They would love to talk to you. And I know that is scary to get up in front of all these people and come up here, but I tell you, every single person here would be ecstatic for you. No judgment. For others of you, maybe it's just kneeling or just sitting quietly and praying and doing business to God in your chair. For others, maybe you come to the altar. For others, maybe you go grab someone and talk to them because you need to. You need to set some things straight. For others, maybe you just need to sit quietly, and this is where I was this morning, and pray the most terrifying prayer there is, which is Psalm 39, "Search my heart, O God, and know my thoughts. Point out the places of evil and wickedness that go against you, and point me into the way of everlasting." And so maybe that's you. Maybe you just need to sit and pray that prayer. You say, "Hey, God, I need you to search me." Paul talks about examining our lives on a consistent basis. And maybe if God reveals something to you, it's just, "Give me the strength, Lord, and the faith to actually just trust you." And so that's what we're going to do. We're just going to, a few minutes. Tyler's going to play quietly. And you have an opportunity to just respond and do business with God, whatever that looks like for you. But all I ask is that you're quiet during this time. My hope is that this invitation, it remains open. Which, what I mean by that is that I know it can be scary to come up in front of everybody, but if there's something you need prayer about, if there's someone you want to talk to, we really, truly would love to have that conversation with you, whatever it is, and support you. And then again, for most of us in here, my challenge to you is to let Psalm 139, that "Search My Heart," be your prayer this week. And if you're like me, that means I was praying that this morning. That is a terrifying thing to pray. And it's like, I'm not sure I want to know. But God, I need you to search me because your ways are always best. And your ways always lead to life. And so, Lord, please don't let me hold on to something I'm not supposed to hold on to. Don't let me be headed to Tarshish unaware. So that's my challenge to you this week.
Thank you again for joining us today. If you'd like more information about ACC, you can find everything you need on our website, anacortischristian.church. That's https://anacortischristian.church. Our weekly services happen every week at 10 a.m. in person and online. We look forward to seeing you. Until next time, have a great week.